Hey folks, it's John. Welcome back to another episode of Talk to Me in the Car, a podcast about all things teaching related and education inspired that I record right here in my vehicle on my drive back from work as a high school instructional coach just outside of Washington, D.C. Or at least that was what I used to do before everything changed. Now in our time of coronavirus, our podcast went from every week, Talk to Me in the Car, to a daily podcast of Talk to Me in the Car. Coronavirus. Look at that. It's a pun. And talking about the very real practical implications that this coronavirus is having as we've changed the nature of what schools look like all across the United States in an effort to figure out what best steps and next steps look like. I don't pretend to be an expert. I'm just an instructional coach who works here in Arlington, Virginia, or Washington, D.C. Though I live in Maryland and I'm from New Jersey, I've kind of been up and down the East Coast, and I've traveled and done work in about 20 different states as a consultant, author, writer, presenter, speaker, PD guy. So I don't pretend to be an expert. I'm just a guy who has done it in this space for a little bit. But I don't pretend to know everything. And I really have this podcast as my chance to start a dialogue, not to stop it, and join in with teachers all over the U.S. And really beyond, as we try to figure out how to make sense in a time where we are kind of building the plane as we fly it, which is really hard and really scary. Today we're going to talk about some of the practical considerations of the COVID shutdown and what that means for our schools going forward, not just for the 2019-2020 school year, but even as we start the possibility of summer planning and 2020 into 2021. There's a lot of pieces to that. We'll get to it in a second. But first things first, like I said, I don't pretend to be an expert. I just want to start the conversation. If you like what you're hearing, you want to join the conversation, please message me on Twitter. New episodes every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And in the meantime, I'm available on the Twitter machine. So shoot me a message on Twitter at mehanedu. We can keep the conversation rolling all day, all week long. I got a lot of free time, like a lot of us here. And it's unexpected, and it's uncertain, and it's unprecedented, and it's scary, and all these things are true at the same time. And I want to be able to help anybody who needs the help, if I can, as we're kind of talking it through together. So please, shoot me a message. If you like the podcast and you want other people to find it, leave a thumbs up or a nice rating. That's great in your favorite podcasting app. It helps other people find it, which is cool, and it helps the conversation keep rolling. And I have a website. It's www.adrenalinerush.com. That's adrenaline with an E, like educational adrenaline. I'm fired up about teaching. I try to share as many resources there as I can for free for educators all over. Please borrow the templates. Please use them. Please adapt them. Please change them. Please steal them. Please make them your own. And let me know how it goes. I'm here to help. I wrote a book called Adrenaline Rush, which is all about game-changing student engagement inspired by theme parks, mud runs, and escape rooms. And whatever I can do to help change the game in your classroom, even if you're not physically in your classroom, that's the goal of a good instructional coach. We propose, we don't impose, you know, we suggest, but we don't, you know, tell you what you have to do. Just bouncing ideas off each other. We're stronger together. So I want to talk about some ideas, some real numbers, some scary numbers, some scary facts, and then maybe seeing out where we are today. You might have seen last week that on, I guess it was Sean Hannity's TV show on Fox News, they hosted, I believe it was Dr. Mehmet Oz, and he talked about the possibility of reopening schools. Dr. Oz was quoted, and then later he apologized, kind of. But he speculated on the show that there was the idea of opening schools, he said, quote, was an appetizing prospect for some people. Appetizing was probably the wrong, adjective to use. But he said that many might find themselves attracted to the idea of reopening schools as soon as possible because, in fairness, for many of our students, schools provide equity, right? They provide a safe space where students can learn and be free of at-home distractions. We know things like domestic violence happens for many people, and that's an unfortunate reality. Being in a home space that is overcrowded when you have two or three or four extra people there all day long, if tensions are already high, there's a lot of things that can go wrong in that. And for our students, that is not a healthy environment to get the, you know, least restrictive environment for them to get their learning done. That makes sense, right? On top of that, today there was an announcement, RAINN, Rape and Incest, National Network, they posted their stats that they've had a spike in the number of teens and children who have contacted them because of all the creepy people who are on the internet in a time where Zoom bombing is a thing and accessing Google Classroom is a thing and like hanging out on the internet at weird hours with people who are trying to sell you products or sell you services or take advantage of people's good graces. So we know that RAINN, which is a major support network for persons who have undergone trauma, sexual abuse, is seeing an uptick in things that are not what we want to see our students dealing with, certainly. So kind of taking all this into consideration, certainly schools, places that provide, a safe space, a warm space, a meal for our students who receive free and reduced meals. Dr. Oz was alluding to in a soundbite culture that is an attractive prospect. Maybe the attractive was the adjective he was looking for better, because it does guarantee some semblance of normalcy, for lack of a better word, for many of our students and their families. Whether they're getting free and reduced meals, whether they're getting a safe place, whether they're getting out of a household that may be overcrowded or dealing with poverty or drug abuse, addiction, and any of these, physical or sexual abuses, certainly, to be in a school space is, in some ways, a great leveler. And that's good. For many of our students, to be in a school space, that's the one place that they have an adult who's really got their best interests at heart. That's unfortunate, and that's real, and that's scary. But likewise, our schools, for many of our students, is the one place they're guaranteed to get a warm meal. And that sucks, because I remember when I was in school, school food wasn't the best food, but to think that would be the best food you'd have all day, that's a very scary prospect, and so we have to, be aware of that. But what Dr. Oz said, what was sort of controversial, is he said, that would be an appetizing prospect to open those schools. And he quoted an article from The Lancet, which stated, opening spaces like schools, what would be the impact, the trade-off? And this is an awful way to kind of start looking at things. But he was just talking about in pure numbers. He says the latest data we have about the coronavirus suggests an infection rate of about 12 to 15%. So that means that in a school of 1,000 people, about 120, 150 people will get sick in your school. Use 1,000 as the average high school size. I mean, that's a small high school, but let's just roll with it because it makes the numbers easy. So what Dr. Oz said is, he goes, and with that, there's also a 2 to 3% mortality rate. And this is where he really drew some ire, understandably, because he said some people may be willing to risk that. Or for many, that might be a trade-off they'd be, willing to kind of roll the dice with. And that raises an issue. He says, certainly any one life lost is sad, but, we have to open the schools and blah, 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 blah. I gotta breathe. I gotta shake it out and say, always presume positive intent, especially in a soundbite culture. They need people to say things that make news and make headlines so we can just keep this 24/7 news media cycle rolling. Fine. Dr. Oz, though he is a TV doctor who is respected or whatever, who cares? He's not an infectious disease specialist. That's important. In as much as Jeff Probst is not actually a safari host, right? Because you watch Survivor. Yes, he looks good in cargo shorts and he has a swagger and an attitude about him when he's on an island. But just because he was cast to be the leader of a TV show does not mean he's actually, well, anyways. But to Dr. Oz's point, to his numbers, he was not saying that was his recommendation. He was citing something in an effort, I'm sure, to keep the conversation rolling because they needed someone to be a public face and say that, though he did later apologize. I thought about those real numbers and it really did give me pause as an instructional coach for a number of reasons. First of all, I'm looking at my own school. Let's use the fake number of 1,000. Pretend that between students and teachers, you have 1,000 people in the building. In an average school year then, if the infection rate is what it is before there's a vaccine, we're looking at 12 to 15% of all persons getting infected. That doesn't count people who are asymptomatic carriers, but just people who are, sick. Maybe not hospitalized sick, but sick enough. 12 to 15%. So you're looking 120, maybe 150 people in a school of about 1,000. That would include secretaries, that would include janitors, that would include food service, that would include counselors, teachers, administrators, and certainly students. And that's to say nothing of what their families might be infected in similar numbers outside of school as they become asymptomatic carriers who then go home and bring that to their houses. So let's pretend, though, just of the 1,000 people in your building, 120 to 150 people get sick in a year. Now, we have the flu, we have mono, we have strep throat, we have a lot of things in our buildings that people get sick every year. And in an average week, maybe, on an average day with 100 teachers in your building, maybe 7 teachers are out of your building anyway, 7% are out. Maybe, let's just pretend. So in that, it's not so shocking to think that 12% of people might be sick. It's an uptick, but it's a manageable uptick. The challenge becomes, without a virus and vaccine, you send those people to school and they get sick. Let's presume that 2 to 3% of persons die if those numbers from The Lancet are true. If that holds in a school of 1,000 people, suddenly 30 people in a year are dead. 30 people is like a whole class of students if you have a class of 30 kids, right? 30 people is, in a 36-week year, one person in your building dying pretty much every week. And I don't know about you, but I, with my students, if there is snow in the forecast for Friday, on Wednesday, it's a minor miracle if I can get them to remain focused, because that Friday's coming up and they know it's coming up. And so they're constantly like looking at their weather apps and looking out the window and trying to figure out how much work they're not going to have to do, because like humans, they're distracted by the next thing that's coming up, which is real. And that's fair. Now take a snow day, which is like a fun interruption to the schedule and a thing to look forward to, and replace it with once a week, someone in your school will die. Suddenly it's very sobering and very humbling to think about what type of quote real learning do we think we could possibly get done if once a week a parent or a student or a teacher or an administrator or a counselor or a cafeteria worker or a janitor or an administrative assistant, just a bus driver, a hall guard, someone that you know and is a familiar face in your building, drops dead once a week. And that's the everyday reality. Like, once a week, someone in this building is going to die. Sorry, guys. Back to work we go for Tuesday. How much work do you think is going to get done in that week when they are waiting for the next bad news to drop? And then, the following week, okay, let's pretend that awful thing ever happened. My God, what a mess that was. Let's all take a breath and try to get back to it, knowing full well that the math tells us it's just another 7 days before it happens somewhere else in the building. I don't know about you, but if you've ever been in a school where a student has passed away, it is a very sad, it is a very scary, it is a very humbling and a very senseless thing. There are no answers. There's nothing we can do. We just have to sit there in that grief and try to help our students normalize what they're processing and take the time for that. And that means rescheduling tests, and that means canceling homework, and that means rescheduling lectures or doing other things that maybe addresses their social emotional needs before their academic needs, right? Helping them just be young men and women and persons of dignity, persons of empathy, persons who are just trying to make sense of the human condition. It takes time. And sometimes that means putting their non-school stuff right at the forefront of everything. Well, what if that happens every week? And I'm having a hard time preparing myself for that, knowing at the end of 2019-20 school year, there's only 3 weeks left, 4 weeks left. This one seems like a loss. Fine. Distance learning is where it's at. But if we were to come back in the fall without a vaccine in place, those numbers are still holding. Even if our hospitals and our doctor's office are not overcrowded, even if we're able to flatten the curve and social distance our way to a place where you can reasonably assume that you can receive treatment, if necessary, from your healthcare provider, that doesn't change that mortality rate. Until there's a vaccine in the offings, and I know the likelihood of younger persons versus immunocompromised persons is not the same, but if one teacher in your building is going to die every week, like, that's crazy. That's not good. If these kids are going to go home and have moms and dads, grandmas and grandpas dying every week, like, and I know, look, there are car accidents every day. There's cancer every day. There is war. There's famine. There's all sorts of awful things that happen. But some of these things are not contagious, right? A disease that we know about and don't have a vaccine for, to welcome our students back to our schools, we'd be putting them in a place where we would openly be putting their health and their safety at risk. And really, any of these proposed solutions to bring children back into a building don't solve or address this fact that the school is not a safe space until there's a vaccine. How are you going to get middle schoolers to social distance? You're going to make them sit 6 feet apart from one another? Do you still use air conditioning in your building? If yes, then the second a kid sneezes on one side of the room, everyone in that room is infected. Are you going to do a split stay where students will do a half day in the morning, like let's say from 8 o'clock till 11:30, and then they go home and the next wave comes through from 12 o'clock to 3:30? Unfortunately, if the teachers are still the same ones as they were in the morning, and the building is the same as it was in the morning, and the desks and the lockers and the water fountains, the textbooks and the light switches and the doorknobs and the banisters, the handrails, the hallways, if all that stuff is the same as it was, yes, you have half the number of people, but you still have 100% of that same space being affected or infected by the new group who passes through. Social distancing only works if you remain socially distant. And so as we're looking at next steps, I keep telling teachers as they're leaning on and reaching out for these resources, we have to think of this not as a blizzard or a snowstorm. We have to think about this like winter. This is our new, I mean, I hate this phrase, but like, this is the new normal for not just the immediate future of the next couple of weeks. This is a very real new skill teachers have to put to their skill box or their toolbox, looking at the fall and going forward. Very realistically, there's not a vaccine for this until January, February. I mean, if the CDC is predicting that there might be another outbreak right on top of cold and flu season, persons who are dealing with COVID on top of persons who are dealing with regular flus, you could be looking at, this is what October, this is what November looks like. And we're right back to distance teaching again, even if it's, quote, safer to go back. And we have to go get people tested again and again and again and again. Or back to school only to shut down again. So without being an alarmist, I want to, you know, talk about communication and expectations. This is where we are. This is what we're looking at. And this is where it needs to go. Until there's a vaccine, schools are probably the least safe spot for the greatest number of persons. That's not to say for everybody, but it does present a real challenge as a teacher to be humble and to be flexible and say, I know what my summer has to look like then. My summer has to be, how do I plan for meeting my students' needs when I might not be able to ever physically meet my students? It's a challenge, but that's the job. And right now, that's what we're being asked to do, we're being tasked with doing. And that flex time where you just head to your beach house and hang out all summer, like every rich teacher that never existed. Like, I know we all have second jobs and we all have things we're doing through the summer. It might mean training yourself up, whether it's Google certification or other things, professional development reads, or leaning in on webinars and Zoom meetings to figure out what is the best practice for you and for your students and for your school moving forward. That's hard. That's humbling. But that's our new reality and where we have to be right now. We'll have further conversations as we go. This one's more sobering and scary than most, and I don't mean to do it that way. But I think it's important to start with where we are and what we know, and then figure out how we can dismantle this and take it apart together. I'm here with you every step of the way. And like I said, I don't pretend to be an expert. I'm a guy who's just figuring out as we go. But I think it's important that we own what we know right now and recognize this will be hard. We will get through it, but it will not be soon. So, you know, so hunker down and let's see what we can do together. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay in touch, and we'll see you back here tomorrow. Thanks again.